Welcome back to the Proms. Well, with the Olympics coming to town, London is one of the major themes of this year's prom season. And tonight we bring you the tale of a flower girl from Lisson Grove and a curmudgeonly bachelor resident in Wimpole Street, Eliza Doolittle and Professor Henry Higgins, principal characters in My Fair Lady. A really sensational cast bring Frederick Lowe and Alan J. Lerner's show to life, leading the performance and conducting a vast orchestra for a piece of music theatre, conductor John Wilson.
I elected to use the orchestrations which André Previn supervised for the 1964 film because it's a prom and it's the Albert Hall, and an orchestration for 26 players in a theatre pit isn't going to work in a building this size.
And it's not just the music that's ambitious. You've got a cast in full costume, full props. It says semi-staged in the programme, but this is fully staged.
It's fully staged. The cast have been in rehearsal for 4 weeks, and the ensemble have been in rehearsal for about 10 days, and everything is being done from memory, and it's a hell of an undertaking for one night. But like I say again, it's the proms.
Well, let me tell you that backstage every corridor is filled with props, from the polished desk of Professor Higgins to costermongers' baskets to that critical pair of slippers that plays such a major role in Act 2. The green room, too, is jammed with rail after rail of costumes. Don't forget our journey tonight includes a trip to Ascot and a visit to the Embassy Ball. Andrew Haveron, leader of the orchestra, takes his position. The cast this evening: Sian Phillips as Mrs. Higgins, Julian Ovenden as Professor, as Freddie Eynsford Hill, Alfred P. Doolittle is played by Alan Armstrong, and James Fleet is Colonel Pickering, and starring Anthony Andrews as Professor Higgins and Annalene Beachy as Eliza Doolittle. So here is conductor John Wilson as we present, live on Radio 3 from the BBC Proms, My Fair Lady.
Thank you. party, Freddy.
Frightfully sorry.
Two bunches of violets trotting the mad a full day's wages. Why don't you look where you're going?
Will you get a taxi, Freddy? Do you want me to catch pneumonia?
Sorry, Mother, sorry. I'll get a taxi right away. I'm sorry.
Ah, he's your son, is he?
Excuse me.
Well, if you'd done your duty by him as a mother should, you wouldn't let him spoil a poor girl's flowers and then run away without paying.
Do nothing of the sort, Mother. The idea.
Yes, well, go on about your business, my girl.
You wouldn't walk away without paying either. Two bunches of violets trotting a mad.
Good heavens.
Any sign of it stopping?
No, it's worse than before.
Oh, cheer up, Captain. Buy a flower off a poor girl.
I'm sorry, I haven't any change.
Well, I can change half a crown here. Take this for tuppence.
No, I really haven't. Oh, stop. There's 3 halfpence, if that's any use to you.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Here. You be careful. Don't give him a flower for it. There's a bloke there. Behind the pillar, taking down every blessed word you're saying.
I ain't done nothing wrong by speaking to the gentleman. I've a right to sell flowers if I keep off the curb. I'm a respectable girl, so help me. I never spoke to him except to ask him to buy a flower off me.
What's the row?
What's all the blooming noise?
There's a tech taking her down.
Sir, don't let him charge me. You don't know what it means to me. They'll drive me on the streets and take away my character for speaking to gentlemen. No!
There. Who's hurting you, you silly girl? What do you take me for?
Oh, my Bible oath, I never said a word.
Shut up. Do I look like a policeman?
And what'd you take down me words for? How do I know whether you took me down right? You just show me what you wrote about me. What's this? That ain't proper writing. I can't read that.
I can. Cheer up, Captain. Ball flower for poor Gil.
It's because I called him Captain. I meant no harm. Oh, sir, don't let him lay a charge against me for a word like that.
Charge? I make no charge. Really, sir, if you are a detective, you need not begin protecting me against molestation by young women until I ask you. Anybody could see the girl meant no harm.
He ain't a tech. He's a gentleman. Look at his shoes. Are all your people down in Selsey? Who told you my people come from Selsey? Never mind, they do. And how do you get to be up so far east? You were born in Lisson Grove.
Ah, what harm is there in my leaving Lisson Grove? It wasn't fit for a pig to live in, and I had to pay 4 and 6
live
a week.
But stop that noise.
Come, he can't touch you. You've a right to live where you please.
Park Lane, for instance.
I'm a good girl, I am.
Do you know where I come from?
Hoxton.
Well, who said I didn't? Blimey, you know everything you do.
Why don't you tell him where he comes from, if you want to go fortune telling? Yeah. Cheltenham, Harrow, Cambridge, India.
Quite right.
Blimey, he ain't a tech. He's a blooming busybody, that's what it is.
May I ask, sir, do you do this sort of thing for a living on the music hall?
I have thought of that. Perhaps I shall someday.
Lay mind his own business and leave a poor girl.
How do you do it, if I may ask?
Oh, simple phonetics. The science of speech. It's my profession, also my hobby. Anybody can spot a Yorkshireman or an Irishman by his brogue. I can place a man within 6 miles. I can place him within 2 miles in London, sometimes within 2 streets.
Ought to be ashamed of himself, a manly coward.
Is there a living in that?
Oh, yes, quite a fat one.
Let him mind his own business and leave a poor
woman. Woman, cease that detestable boo-hooing instantly, or else seek the shelter of some other place of worship.
I've a right to be here if I like, same as you.
A woman who utters such depressing and disgusting sounds has no right to be anywhere, no right to live. Remember, you're a human being with a soul. And the divine gift of articulate speech, and that your native language is the language of Shakespeare and Milton and the Bible. And don't sit there crooning like a bilious pigeon.
Now!
Look at her, a prisoner of the gutters, condemned by every syllable she utters. By right she should be taken out of her for the cold-blooded murder of the English tongue.
Now!
Heavens, what noise. This is what the British population calls an elementary education.
Come, sir, I think you picked a poor example.
Did I? Hear them down in Soho Square, dropping H's everywhere, speaking English any way they like. You, sir, did you go to school?
What are you typing for, a fool?
No one taught him take instead of type. Hear a Yorkshireman, or worse, hear a Cornishman converse. I'd rather hear a choir singing flat. Chickens cackling in a barn, just like this one.
Gone.
Gone. I ask you, sir, what sort of word is that? It's owl and gone, the keeper in her place. Not her wretched clothes and dirty face. Why can't the English teach their children how to speak? This verbal class distinction by now should be antique. If you spoke as she does, sir, instead of the way you do, why, you might be selling flowers too.
Beg your pardon?
An Englishman's way of speaking absolutely classifies her. The moment he talks, he makes some other Englishman despise him. One common language I'm afraid we'll never get. Oh, why can't the English learn to set a good example to people whose English is painful to your ears? The Scots and the Irish leave you close to tears. There are even places where English completely disappears. In America, they haven't used it for years. Why can't the English teach their children how to speak? Norwegians learn Norwegian, and Greeks are taught their Greek. In France, every Frenchman knows his language from A to Z. Well, the French don't care what they do, actually, as long as they pronounce it properly. Arabians learn Arabian with the speed of summer lightning. Hebrews learn it backwards, which is absolutely frightening. But use proper English, you're regarded as a freak. Why can't the English? Why can't the English learn to speak? See this creature with her curbstone English, the English that will keep her in the gutter for the rest of her days. Well, sir, in 6 months, I could pass her off as a duchess at an embassy ball. Yes, I could even get her a place as a lady's maid or a shop assistant, which requires better English.
Yeah. What's that you say?
Yes, you squashed cabbage leaf. You disgrace to the noble architecture of these columns. You incarnate insult to the English language. I could pass you off as the Queen of Sheba.
Oh, you don't believe that, Captain?
Oh, yes, yes, anything's possible. I myself am a student of Indian dialects.
Are you? Do you know Colonel Pickering, author of Spoken Sanskrit?
I am Colonel Pickering. Who are you?
Higgins! Henry Higgins, author of Higgins Universal Alphabet.
I came from India to meet you.
I was going to India to meet you!
Higgins!
Pickering! Well, where are you staying?
At the Carlton.
Oh, no, you're not. You're staying at 27A Wimpole Street. You come home with me. We'll have a jaw over supper.
Right, you are.
Quite flower kind, sir. I'm short for me lodging.
Liar. You said you could change half a crown.
You ought to be stuffed with nails, you are. Here! Take the old blooming basket for sixpence.
The church. A reminder. Do you know, Indian dialects have always fascinated me. I've got records of over 50.
Well, have you now? Did you know there are over 200?
Good heavens, it's worse than London.
Wow.
Shouldn't you stand up, gentlemen? We've got a blooming heiress in our midst.
Would you be looking for a good butler, Eliza?
You won't do.
It's rather dull in town. I think I'll take me to Paris.
The missus wants to open up the castle in Capri.
Me doctor recommends a quiet summer by the sea.
This spring, Eliza? Spirits?
All I want is a room somewhere, far away from the cold night air, with one enormous chair. Wouldn't it be lovely? Lots of chocolate for me to eat, lots of coal making lots of.
Or not drunk. Come on, Doolittle, are you?
you go. Hop in now, on the double, on the double.
Thanks for your hospitality, George. Send the bill to Buckingham Palace. Where's Eliza? She should be good for a bob or two after all I give her.
What you ever give her?
I'll give her the greatest gift a human being can give. Life. I'd park the walk through on a fine spring night. The old ruddy city of London to roam about in selling her blooming flowers. I'll give her all that. And then I'll disappears and leaves her on her own to enjoy it. Now, if that ain't worth half a crown now and again, I'll take off me belt and give her what for.
You got a good heart, Alfie. But if you want that half crown from Eliza, you better have a good story to go with it.
Eliza, what's the price?
Not a brass farthing.
Now, you look here, Eliza. You wouldn't have the heart to send me home to your stepmother without a drop of liquid protection now, would you?
Stepmother? Ha! Stepmother indeed.
Well, I'm willing to marry her. It's me that suffers by it. I'm a slave to that woman, Eliza. Just because I ain't her lawful husband. Come on, Eliza, slip your old dad off a crown to go home on.
Well, I had a bit of luck myself tonight, so here.
George, three glorious beers.
Don't keep coming around, counting on half crowns from me.
Good night, Eliza. You're a noble daughter. You see, boys, I told you not to go home. It's just faith, hope, and a little bit of luck. The Lord above gave man an arm of iron so he could do his job and never shirk. The Lord above gave man an arm of iron, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, someone else will do the thing. Of luck, with a little bit of luck, when temptation comes, you'll be right.
With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of luck, you'll be right in.
Oh, you can walk the straight and narrow, but with a little bit of luck, you'll run amok. The gentle sex was made for man to marry, to tear his nest and see his food is cooked. The gentle sex was made for man to marry, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, you can have it all and not get.
With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of luck, you won't get it. With a little bit, with a little bit.
I'm trying to keep them quiet, lady.
Shut up! Once and for all, shut up! One more sound, I'll tell you, I'll call a copper!
Here, 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 stop that loud talk. People are trying to sleep. Let's try to be neighbourly like, boys. After all, the Lord above made man to help his neighbour. No matter where on land or sea or foe, the Lord above my man to help his neighbour. But with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, when it comes around you won't be free.
With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of luck you won't be young.
They're always throwing goodness at you, but with a little bit of luck a man can duck. Oh, it's a prideful man to have a man. If it is right for all, we'll bring him down. Oh, it's a prideful man to have a man. With a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, you can see the blood out, don't find out.
With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of luck, she won't find out. Yeah.
I say, Higgins, couldn't we turn on the lights?
Nonsense. You hear much better in the dark.
But it's such a fearful strain listening to all these mouth sounds. I'm quite done up for this morning.
Mr. Higgins, you there?
What is it, Mrs. Pierce?
A young woman wants to see you, sir.
Young woman? What does she want? Has she an interesting accent?
Simply ghastly, sir.
Oh, good. Well, let's have her up. Show her up, Mrs. Pierce.
Very good, sir. It's for you to say.
I say, this is a bit of luck. I can show you how we make records. We'll set her talking, and then I'll take her down in Bell's visible speech, and then in broad Romic, and then we can put her on the phonograph so that you can turn her on whenever you want with the written transcript right before you.
This is the young woman, sir.
Good morning, my good man. Might I have the pleasure of a word?
No. This is the girl I jotted down last night. She's no use. I've got all the records I want of the Listen Grove lingo. I'm not going to waste another cylinder on it. No, be off with you. I don't want you.
Don't be so saucy. You ain't heard what I come for yet. You tell him I come in a taxi.
Nonsense, girl. What do you think a gentleman like Mr. Higgins cares what you came in?
Ah, we are proud. Well, he ain't above giving lessons, not him. I heard him say so. Well, I ain't come here to ask for any compliment, and if my money's not good enough, I can go elsewhere.
Good enough for what?
Good enough for you. Now you know, don't you? I'm come to have lessons, I am, and to pay for them too, make no mistake.
Well, what do you expect me to say to you?
Well, if you was a gentleman, you might ask me to sit down, I think. Don't I tell you I'm bringing your business?
Pickering, shall we ask this baggage to sit down? Or shall we throw it out of the window?
No! I won't be called a baggage when I've offered a pay like any lady!
What is it you want, my girl?
I want to be a lady in a flower shop. Instead of selling flowers at the corner of Tottenham Court Road. They won't take me unless I can talk more genteel. He said he could teach me. Well, here I am, ready to pay, not asking any favour, and he treats me as if I was dirt. I know what lessons cost as well as you do, and I'm ready to pay.
How much?
Oh, now you're talking. I thought you'd come off it when you saw a chance of getting back a bit of what you chucked at me last night. You'd had a drop in, didn't you?
Sit down.
Well, if you're going to make a compliment
off it. Sit down.
Sit down, girl. Do as you're told.
What is your name?
Eliza Doolittle.
Well, won't you sit down, Miss Doolittle?
Oh, I don't mind if I do.
How much do you propose to pay me for these lessons?
Oh, I know what's right. A lady friend of mine gets French lessons for 18 pence an hour from a real French gentleman. Well, you wouldn't have the face to ask me the same for teaching me my own language as you would French. So, I won't give more than a shilling. Take it or leave it.
You know, Pickering, if you consider a shilling, not just as a simple shilling, but as a percentage of this girl's income, why, it works out fully equivalent to, 60 or 70 pounds to a millionaire. By George, it's the biggest offer I ever had!
60 pounds? What are you talking about? I never offered you 60 pounds.
Hold your tongue.
I get 60 pounds?
Don't be silly, girl.
But I ain't got 60 pounds!
You're crying and sit down. Nobody is going to touch your money.
Someone's going to touch you with a broomstick if you don't stop that snivelling.
Anyone who'd think you was my father.
If I decide to teach you, I should be worse than two fathers to you. Now sit down. Oh. Here.
What's this for?
To wipe your eyes. To wipe any part of your face that feels moist. And remember, that is your handkerchief and that is your sleeve. And do not mistake the one for the other if you wish to become a lady in a shop.
It's no use talking to her like that, Mr. Higgins. She doesn't understand you.
Here, give a handkerchief to me. Give it to me, not to you.
Higgins, I'm interested. What about your boast that you could pass her off as a duchess at the embassy ball? I'll say you're the greatest teacher alive if you can make that good. I'll bet you all the expenses of the experiment you can't do it. And I'll even pay for the lessons.
Oh, you're real good. Thank you, Captain.
Ah, it's almost irresistible. She's so deliciously low. So horribly dirty.
Ah, I ain't dirty. I wash my face and hands before I come, I did.
I'll take it. I'll make a duchess of the draggle-tailed gutter snipe. I'll start today, at once, this moment. Mrs. Pierce, take her away and clean her. Sandpaper, if it won't come off any other way. Is there a good fire in the kitchen?
Yes, but...
Well, take off all her clothes and burn them. Ring up and order some new ones. We can wrap her up in brown paper till they come.
You ain't no gentleman. You're not to talk of such things. I'm a respectable girl, sir, so help me, and I know what the likes of you are,
oh,
I do.
No, we want none of your listen grove prudery here, young woman. You've got to learn to behave like a duchess. Take her away, Mrs. Pierce. If she gives you any trouble, wallop her.
I'll call the police, I will.
But I've got no place to put her.
Put her in the dustbin.
Ow!
Come, Higgins, be reasonable.
You must be reasonable, Mr. Higgins. You really must. You can't walk all over everybody like this.
I walk over everybody? My dear Mrs. Pierce, my dear Picking, I've not the slightest intention of walking over anybody. I merely propose that we should be kind to this poor girl. And if I did not express myself clearly, it's because I did not wish to offend her delicacy. Or yours.
But, sir, you can't take up a girl like that as if you were picking up a pebble on the beach.
Why not?
Why not? You don't know anything about her. What about her parents? She may be married.
Gone.
There, as the girl very properly says, gone.
Who'd marry me?
Oh, by George, Eliza, the streets will be strewn with the bodies of men shooting themselves for your sake before I'm done with you.
I'm going away. He's off his chump, he is. I don't want no balm, he's teaching me.
Oh, mad, am I? Oh, very well, Mrs. Pierce. Don't order the new clothes for her. Throw it out! Wicked, ungrateful wretch.
Stop it, Mr. Higgins. I will not allow it. Go home to your parents, girl.
I ain't got no parents.
Ah, there you are. You see, she ain't got no parents. The girl doesn't belong to anybody. She's no use to anybody but me. Take her upstairs,
Mrs. Pierce.
But
what's to become of her, sir? Is she to be paid anything? You must be sensible, sir.
But what on earth would she want with money? She'll have her food, her clothes. She'll only drink if you give her money.
You are a brute. It's a lie. Nobody ever saw the sign of liquor on me. Sir, don't let him speak to me like that. You're a gentleman.
Higgins, does it occur to you that the girl has some feelings?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Well, no feelings we need bother about, have you, Eliza?
Mr. Higgins, I must know on what terms the girl is to be here. What is to become of her when you've finished your teaching? You must look ahead a little, sir.
Well, what's to become of her if I leave her in the gutter? Answer me that, Mrs. Pierce.
Well, that's her business, Mr. Higgins, not yours.
Well, when I've done with her, I'll put her back in the gutter. Then it will be her own business again. So that's all right, isn't it?
You've no feeling art in you. You don't care for nothing but yourself. Yeah, I've had enough of this. I'm going.
Eliza, have some chocolates.
How do I know what might be in them? I've heard of girls being drugged by the like of you.
Oh. Well, pledge of good faith. I eat one half, and you eat the other. Yes. You can have boxes of it. Barrels of them every day. You may live on them, eh?
I wouldn't have ate it, only I'm too ladylike to take it out of my mouth.
Yes, think of it, Eliza. Think of chocolates and taxes and gold and diamonds.
No, I don't want no gold and no diamonds. I'm a good girl, I am.
Excuse me, Higgins, but I really must interfere. Mrs. Pierce is quite right. If the girl is to put herself into your hands for 6 months for an experiment in teaching, well, she must understand thoroughly what she's doing.
Eliza, You are to stay here for the next 6 months, learning how to speak beautifully like a lady in a florist's shop. If you are good and do everything you're told, you may sleep in a proper bedroom, have lots to eat and money to buy chocolates and take rides in taxis. If you are naughty and idle, you will sleep in the back kitchen among the black beetles and be walloped by Mrs. Pierce with a broomstick. At the end of 6 months, you shall go to Buckingham Palace in a carriage, beautifully dressed. If the king finds out that you are not a lady, you will be taken by the police to the Tower of London, where your head will be cut off as a warning to other presumptuous flower girls. If you are not found out, you may have a present of 7 and 6 to start life with as a lady in a shop. If you refuse this offer, you will be the most wicked, ungrateful girl, and the angels will weep for you. Now, satisfied, Pickering? Could I put it any plainer or fairer, Mrs. Pierce?
Come with me, Eliza.
That's right, Mrs. Pierce. Bundle her off to the bathroom.
You're a great bully you are. I won't stay here if I don't like, and I won't let nobody wallop me.
Don't you answer back, girl.
If I'd known what I was letting myself in for, I wouldn't have come up
here.
I've always been
before.
A good girl, I have, and I've never been in trouble with the police. And I won't go near that king, not if I'm going to have my head cut off.
In 3 months, in 6 months, but in three, if I have luck and she has a good ear and a quick tongue, I'll turn her into a queen. I'll make a queen of that barbarous wretch.
Forgive the bluntness, Higgins, but if I am to be in this business, I shall feel responsible for the girl. I hope there's no question of taking advantage of her position.
What? That thing? Sacred, I assure you.
Come now, Higgins, you know what I mean. This is no trifling matter. Are you a man of good character where women are concerned?
Have you ever met a man of good character where women are concerned?
Yes, very frequently.
Well, I haven't. I find the moment I let a woman make friends with me, she becomes jealous, exacting, suspicious, and a damn nuisance. I find the moment I let myself become friends with a woman, I become selfish and tyrannical. So here I am, a confirmed old bachelor, and likely to remain so. After all, Pickering, I'm an ordinary man who desires nothing more than just the ordinary chance to live exactly as he likes and do precisely what he wants. An average man am I, of no eccentric whim, who likes to live his life free of strife, doing whatever he thinks is best for him. Just an ordinary man. A woman in your life, and your serenity is through. She'll redecorate your home from the cellar to the dome, and then get on to the enthralling fun of overhauling you. A little woman in your life, and you're up against a wall. Make a plan and you will find she has something else in mind, and so rather than do either, you do something else that neither likes at all. Want to talk of Keats or Milton? She only wants to talk of love. You go to see a play or ballet, spend it searching for a glove. Oh, little woman in your life, and you invite your toes to stay. Let them buy their wedding bands for those anxious little hands. I'd be equally as willing for a dentist to be drilling than to ever let a woman in my life. Very gentle man, even-tempered and good-natured, whom you never hear complain, who has the milk of human kindness by the quart in every vein. A patient man am I, down to my fingertips, the sort who never would, ever could, let an insulting remark escape his lips. Just a very gentle man. But let a woman in your life, and patience hasn't got a chance. She will beg you for advice, your reply will be concise, and she'll listen very nicely, then go out and do precisely what she wants. You were a man of grace and polish. Let the others of my sex tie the knot around their necks. I'd prefer a new edition of the Spanish Inquisition than to ever let a woman in my life. I'm a quiet living man who prefers to spend the evenings in the silence of his room, who likes an atmosphere as restful as an undiscovered tune. A pensive man am I, of philosophic joys, who likes to meditate, contemplate, free from humanity's mad inhuman noise. Just a quiet living man. But let a woman in your life, and your sabbatical is through. In a life that never ends, come an army of her friends, come to jabber and to chatter and to tell her what the matter is with you. She'll have a booming, boisterous family who'll descend on you en masse. She'll have a large, Wagnerian mother with a voice that shatters glass. Oh, let a woman in your life. Let a woman in your life. Let a woman in your life. I shall never let a woman in my life.
Come on, you two! I ain't telling you again! Come on, Doolittle, there you go! Hop it now! I ain't running no charity bazaar!
Thanks for your hospitality, George. Send the bill...
Yeah, I know. Send the bill to Buckingham Palace.
You can buy your own drinks now, Alfie Doolittle. Fallen into a tab of butter, you have.
What tab of butter?
You're Eliza. Oh, you're a lucky man, Alfie Doolittle.
What are you talking about? What about Eliza?
He don't know her own father. And he don't know. Moved in with a swell she has. Left here in a taxi all by herself. Smart as paint, and ain't been home for 3 days. Then I gets this message from her this morning. She says she wants her things sent over to 27A Wimpole Street, care of Hoover, Professor Higgins. And what things does she want? Her birdcage and her Chinese fan. But she says never mind about sending any clothes.
Oh, no, she had a career in front of her. Harry boy, we're in for a booze up. The sun is shining on Alfred P. Doolittle. A man was made to help support his children, which is the right and proper thing to do. A man was made to help support his children, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, they go out and start supporting you.
Oh. of love. Every bird in our two wings is free.
Working the girl this way, making her say her alphabet over and over from sun up to sundown, even during meals. When will it stop?
When she does it properly, of course. Is that all, Mrs. Pierce?
No, sir, the mail.
Pay the bills and say no to the invitations.
There's another letter from that American millionaire, Ezra D. Wannafeller. He still wants you to lecture for his Moral Reform League.
Throw it away!
It's the third letter he's written you, sir. You should at least answer it.
Oh, very well, Mrs. Pierce. Put it on the desk. I'll get to it.
If you please, sir, there is a dustman downstairs. An Alfred P. Doolittle. He says that you have his daughter here.
I say.
Show the blackguard up.
Well, he may not be a blackguard, Higgins.
Nonsense, of course he's a blackguard.
Whether it's a blackguard or not, I'm afraid we shall have some trouble with him.
I think not. If there's any trouble to be had, he shall have it with me, not I with him.
Do little, sir.
Professor Higgins.
Yep.
Oh. Morning, Governor. I come about a very serious matter, Governor.
Born in Hounslow, mother Welsh. What do you want, Doolittle?
I want me daughter, that's what I want.
See? Oh, well, of course you do. You're her father, aren't you? Well, I'm very glad to see there's a spark of family feeling left. She's upstairs here. Take her away at once.
What?
Well, take her away. You don't expect me to keep your daughter for you, do you?
Now, look here, Governor. Is this reasonable? Is it fair to take advantage of a man like this? The girl belongs to me. You got her. Where do I come in?
How dare you come here and attempt to blackmail me?
Now, don't...
You sent her here on purpose.
Don't take a man up like that, Governor.
The police shall take you up. This is a plant, a plot. Extort money by threats. I shall telephone the police.
Have I asked you for a brass farthing? I'll leave it to this gentleman here. Have I said a word about money?
What else did you come for?
Well, what would a man come for? Be human, Governor.
Alfred, you sent her here on purpose.
So help me, Governor, I never did.
Well, then how did you know she was here?
I'll tell you, Governor, if you'll only let me get a word in. I'm willing to tell you. I'm wanting to tell you. I'm waiting to tell you.
Oh, Pickering. This chap has a certain natural gift of rhetoric. Observe the rhythm of his native wood notes wild. I'm willing to tell you. I'm wanting to tell you. I'm waiting to tell you. That's the Welsh strain in him. How did you know Eliza was here if you didn't send her?
She sent back for her luggage and I got to hear about it. She said she didn't want no clothes. What was I to think from that, Governor? I ask you, as a parent, what was I to think?
So you came to save her from worse than death, eh?
Just so, Governor, that's right.
Yes, Mrs. Pierce, Eliza's father has come to take her away. Give her to him, would you?
Now, wait a minute, Governor. Wait a minute. You and me is men of the world, aren't we?
Men of the world, are we? Perhaps you better go, Mrs. Pierce.
Yes, indeed. I think so, sir.
Governor, I've taken a sort of fancy to you. And if you want the girl, I'm not so set on having her back home again. But what I might be open to is an arrangement. All I ask is my rights as a father. And you're the last man alive to expect me to let her go for nothing. For I can see you're one of the straight sort, Governor. Well, what's a £5 note to you? And what's Eliza to me?
I think you ought to know, Doolittle, that Mr. Higgins' intentions are entirely honourable.
Of course they are, Governor. If I thought they wasn't, I'd ask 50.
Do you mean to say you'd sell your own daughter for £50?
Have you no morals, man?
No, I can't afford them, Governor. Neither could you if you was as poor as me. Not that I mean any harm, mind you. But if Eliza's going to get a bit out of this, why not me too, eh? Look at it my way. What am I? I ask you, what am I? I'm one of the undeserving poor, that's what I am. Think what that means to a man. It means he's up against middle-class morality all the time. If there's anything going and I put in for a bit of it, it's always the same story. You're undeserving, so you can't have it. But my needs is as great as the most deserving widows that ever got money out of 6 different charities in 1 week for the death of the same husband. I don't need less than a deserving man. I need more. I don't eat less hearty than he does. And I drink a lot more. I'm playing straight with you. I ain't pretending to be deserving. I'm undeserving. And I mean to go on being undeserving. I like it, and that's the truth. But will you take advantage of a man's nature to do him out of the price of his own daughter, what he's brought up, fed and clothed by the sweat of his brow, till she's grown big enough to be interesting to you two gentlemen? Is £5 unreasonable? I put it to you. And I'll leave it to you.
You know, Pickering, if we took this chap in hand for 3 months, he could choose between a popular pulpit in Wales and a seat in the cabinet. I suppose we'd better give him £5.
Oh, he'll make bad use of it, I'm afraid.
Not me, so help me, Governor, I won't. Just one good spree for myself and the missus. Giving pleasure to ourselves and employment to others. And satisfaction to you to know it ain't been thrown away. You couldn't spend it better.
Oh, this is irresistible. Let's give him 10!
No! The missus wouldn't have the heart to spend 10, Governor. £10 is a lot of money. It makes a man prudent-like. And then goodbye to happiness. Now, you give me what I ask for, Governor. Not a penny less, not a penny more.
I'd rather draw the line at encouraging this sort of immorality. Doolittle, why don't you marry that missus of yours? After all, marriage is not so frightening. You married Eliza's mother.
Who told you that, Governor?
Well, nobody told me. I just concluded that. Oh, right.
Pickering, if we listen to this man another moment, we shall have no convictions left. £5, I think you said.
Thank you, Governor.
I won't.
Beg pardon, miss.
I won't say them bloody vows one more time.
Blimey, it's Eliza. I never thought she'd clean up so good looking. She does me proud, don't she, Governor?
Here, what are you doing here?
You hold your tongue. And don't you give these gentlemen any a lip. If you have any trouble with the Governor, give her a few licks of the strap. That's the way to improve her mind. Good morning, gentlemen. Cheerio, Eliza. Huh?
By George, there's a man for you. A philosophical genius of the first water, Mrs. Pierce. Write to Mr. Ezra D. Wonnefeller and tell him that if he wants a lecturer, to get in touch with Mr. Alfred P. Doolittle, a common dustman, but one of the most original moralists in England.
Yes, sir.
Here, what did he come for?
Say your vows.
I know my vows. I knew them before I
if
come.
If you know them, say them.
I, E, I, O, yo.
Stop! A, E, I, O, U.
That's what I said. I, E, I, O, U. I've been saying them for 3 days and I won't say them no more.
I know it's difficult, Miss Doolittle, but try to understand.
Oh, it's no use explaining, Pickering. As a military man, you ought to know that. Drilling is what she needs. Now, much better leave her, otherwise she'll be turning to you for sympathy.
All right, if you insist, but have a little patience with her, Higgins.
Of course, of course. Say
you ain't got no heart in you.
A.
I.
A.
I.
A.
I.
A.
I.
A.
I.
A.
I.
Eliza, you will pronounce your vows correctly before the day is out. Otherwise, there will be no lunch, no dinner, and no chocolates.
Sorry, but your tears will be too late. You'll be broke and I'll have money. Will I help you? Don't be funny. Just you wait, Henry Higgins. Just you wait. Just you wait, Henry Higgins, till you're sick. And you scream to fetch a doctor double quick. I'll be off a second later and go straight to the theatre.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Didn't I say that?
No, Eliza, you didn't say that. You didn't even say that. Now, every night before you go to bed, where you used to say your prayers, I want you to repeat, the rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain 50 times. You'll get on much better with the Lord if you learn not to offend his ears. Now for your H's. Oh, Pickering. This is going to be ghastly.
Control yourself, Higgins. Give the girl a chance.
No, I know. Can't be expected. She can't be expected to get it right the very first time. Now, Eliza, watch very closely. You see this flame? Well, every time you pronounce your H correctly, the flame will waver. Every time you drop your H, the flame will remain stationary. That is how you will know that you've done it properly. And now in time, your ear will know the difference. Now, listen carefully. In Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire, hurricanes hardly ever happen. So repeat after me. In Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire, hurricanes hardly ever happen.
In Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire, hurricanes hardly ever happen.
Have you no ear at all?
Should I do it over?
No, please, no. We shall have to start at the very beginning. Try this.
Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, 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 ha. Oh, that's right. That's right. Continue, continue.
Ha, ha, ha.
Does the same thing happen in India, Pickering? This peculiar habit of dropping a letter like the letter H and then using it where it shouldn't be, like ever instead of ever. It's the same thing is true with the Slavic people when they try to speak English. They do it with the letter G. They say linger instead of linger, and then they turn right round and say singer instead of singer. Most peculiar. I wonder why that is. Oh, dear. That's right. Go on. Go on.
Oh, Professor Higgins. Oh, Professor Higgins. Right hand baby slaves away.
How kind of you to let me come.
How kind of you to let me come.
No, 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 no. Kind of you, kind of you. It's like, well, cup of tea. Kind of you. Say, cup of tea.
A cup of tea.
No, 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 no. Oh, dear Pickering. I must say, this is awfully good cake. I wonder where Mrs. Pierce gets it.
First rate, and the strawberry tart is delicious. Did you try the plain cake?
Try it again.
Plain cake.
Pickering! Try it again, Eliza. Open your mouth, put your tongue forward, squeeze it against the top of your lower teeth. That's right, and now say... And now say, of.
Oh.
And now say, cup, 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 of.
Cup, cup,
by
cup,
Jove, that
cup,
was a glorious of, tea. Of, I say, cup, Higgins, cup, do finish cup, the strawberry tart. I couldn't eat another thing.
Oh, no, thanks, old chap. I couldn't possibly.
Oh, it's a shame to waste it.
Oh, no, no, no. It won't be wasted. No. I know somebody who's extraordinarily fond of strawberry tart.
Of, cup, cup. Cup,
chip, 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 chip,
chip. Oh, Professor Higgins. Oh, Professor Higgins. On he walks against all odds. Oh, Professor Higgins. 9 p.m., 10 p.m., on through midnight.
There we are. Now, I want you to read this and enunciate every word just as though the marbles were not in your mouth. With blackest moss, the flower pots were thickly crusted, one and all. The rusted nails fell from the knots that held the pair to the gable wall. Every word clear as a bell.
When blackest moss, the flower pots were thickly crusted, I come.
I say, Higgins, are the marbles really necessary?
If they were necessary for Demosthenes, they are necessary for Eliza Doolittle. Go on, Eliza.
No,
I can't understand a word. Not a word!
I
say, Higgins, perhaps the poem is too difficult for them. Why not try a simple one like the owl and the pussycat?
Pickering, I can't hear a word the girl is saying! What's the matter? Why have you stopped?
I swallowed one.
Oh, dear. Never mind. Plenty more!
Quit, Professor Higgins!
I'm so tired.
For God's sake, Higgins, it's nearly 3 o'clock in the morning. Do be reasonable.
I am always reasonable. Oh, Eliza. If I could go on with a blistering headache, you can.
I have headache too.
Here. Oh, Eliza, I know you're tired, I know your head aches. I know your nerves are as raw as meat in a butcher's window. But think what you're trying to accomplish. Think what you're dealing with. The majesty and grandeur of the English language. Why, it's the greatest possession we have. The noblest sentiments that ever flowed through the hearts of men are contained in its extraordinary, imaginative, musical mixtures of sounds. Well, that's what you set yourself to conquer, Eliza. And conquer it, you will. Now, try it again.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
What was that?
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Again.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
By George, she's got it! Now once again, where does it mean?
On the plain.
And where's that soggy plain?
In Spain. The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain. The rain
action.
Hurricanes hardly happen. How kind of you to let me come.
Now once again, where does it rain?
On the plain, on the plain.
And where's that blasted plain?
In Spain, in Spain.
Making fine progress. I think the time has come to try her out.
Oh, are you feeling all right, Mr. Higgins?
Quite well, Mrs. Pearson, you?
Yeah, very well, sir, thank you.
Splendid.
Mr. Higgins.
It's time. We should test her in public. See how she fares.
Mr. Higgins, I was awakened by a dreadful pounding. Do you know what that might have been?
Pounding? I heard no pounding, did you, Pickering?
No.
If this continues, Mrs. Pierce, I think you should see a doctor. I know. Let's take her to the races.
The races?
Yes. My mother's box at Ascot.
Ascot? Well, you can inform your mother first, of course.
Of course. No. Bet surprise. Huh? Now, let's go straight to bed, and first thing in the morning, we'll go out and we'll buy her a dress. Eliza, get on with your work.
But Mr. Higgins, it's early in the morning.
What better time to work than early in the morning? Where does one buy a lady's gown?
Whiteley's, of course.
How the devil did you know that?
Common knowledge.
Well, let's not get her anything too flowery. I despise those gowns with a sort of weed here and a weed there. Something simple and elegant and modest is called for. Ooh, perhaps with a sash. Oh, yes. That's it.
Yes, good night. Good night, Mrs. Pierce.
You've all been working much too hard. I think the strain is beginning to show. Eliza, I don't care what Mr. Higgins says. Put down your books and go to bed.
Bed, I couldn't go to bed. My head's too light to try to set it down. Sleep, I couldn't sleep tonight. Not for all the jewels in the crown. I could have danced all night. I could have danced. Thousand things I've never done. Nina. Don't you agree now? She ought to be in bed.
I could have died.
Tired out. Strong eyed.
I could have
died.
Strong
eyed.
And
still.
Now say goodnight.
Have
please turn out the light. Please hold me tight.
I could have spread my wings and done a thousand things I've never done before. I'll never know if it's so exciting. Why all at once my heart took flight?
Today?
Yes, Mrs. Higgins. As a matter of fact, he's here.
What a disagreeable surprise. Ascot is usually the one place I can come to with my friends and not run the risk of seeing my son, Henry. Whenever my friends meet him, I never see them again.
Well, he had to come, Mrs. Higgins. You see, he's taking the girl to the annual embassy ball and, well, he wanted to try her out first.
I beg your pardon?
You know, the annual embassy ball.
Yes, I know the ball, but what girl?
Oh, didn't I mention that?
No, you did not.
Oh, it was quite simple, really. One night I went to the opera at Covent Garden to hear one of my favourite operas, Aida. And as I was coming out, incidentally, they didn't do Aida that night. No, they did Götterdämmerung. I'd never heard Götterdämmerung before. By George, that's a rackety one. When the tenor chap finally
left. What about the girl, Colonel?
Oh, yes, yes. As I was coming out, I met your son, Henry, who in turn met Miss Doolittle, who now lives with Henry.
Lives with Henry? Is it a love affair?
Oh, no. Heavens knows, no. She's a flower girl. He picked her up off the curbstone.
A flower girl?
Yeah. Yes, Higgins said to me, Pickering, you see this girl, in 6 months I could make a duchess of her. I said, nonsense. He came right back with, yes, I can. All right, I said, I'll make a bet with it that you can't. And I did, and he is.
But, Colonel, I still don't understand.
The horses are leaving the paddock, Mrs. Higgins.
Excuse me, Mrs. Higgins, I must fetch her.
But, Colonel, am I to understand that my husband is bringing a flower girl to Ascot?
Yes, Mrs. Higgins, that's it precisely. Jolly good, Mrs. Higgins, jolly good.
You'd better stay close to the car, Charles. I may be leaving abruptly.
Which one are you?
Ah, Mother! Have you seen Pickering? My, you look nice.
I saw Colonel Pickering and Henry D. I am most provoked. I've heard you've brought a common flower girl from Covent Garden to my box at Ascot.
Oh, darling, she'll be all right. I've taught her to speak properly. And she's strict instructions as to her behaviour. She's to stick to two subjects, the weather and everyone's health. Sort of fine day and how'd you do and that sort of thing, and not just let herself go on things in general. Help her along, darling. You'll be quite safe.
Safe? To talk about our health in the middle of a race?
Well, she's got to talk about something.
Henry, you're not even dressed properly.
I changed my tie.
Oh, where's the girl now?
Being pinned.
Pinned?
Yes. Some of the clothes we bought her didn't quite fit properly. I told Pickering we should have taken her with us.
You're a pretty pair of babies playing with your live doll. Oh, Mrs. Eynsford Hill.
Mrs. Higgins.
Oh, damn, are all these people with you?
Mrs. Higgins, is this your celebrated son?
I'm sorry to say my celebrated son has no manners. He may be the life and soul of the Royal Society soirees, but he's rather trying on more commonplace occasions. You mustn't mind him.
I don't.
Mother.
Ah. Colonel Pickering, you're just in time for tea.
Thank you, Mrs. Higgins. May I introduce Miss Eliza Doolittle?
My dear Miss Doolittle.
How kind of you to let me come.
Delighted, my dear. Mrs. Eynsford Hill, Miss Eynsford Hill, Miss Doolittle.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Lord and Lady Boxington, Miss
Doolittle. How do
you do?
How do you do?
Sir Reginald Tarrington.
How do you do?
How do you do?
And Freddie Eynsford Hill.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Miss Doolittle?
Good afternoon, Professor Higgins.
The first race was ever so exciting, Miss Doolittle. I'm so sorry you missed it.
Will it rain, do you think?
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Olé!
In Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire, hurricanes hardly ever happen.
How awfully funny.
What is wrong with that, young man? I bet I got it right.
Smashing!
I do hope we don't have any unseasonably cold spells. It brings on so much influenza, and our whole family is susceptible to it.
My aunt died of influenza. So they said, but it's my belief they done the old woman in.
Done her in?
Yes, Lord, love you. Why should she die of influenza when she come through diphtheria right enough the year before? Fairly blue with it she was. They all thought she was dead, but my father, he kept ladling gin down her throat. Then she come to so sudden, she bit the bowl off the spoon.
Dear me.
Now, what call would a woman with that strength in her have to die of influenza? And what become of her new straw hat that should have come to me? Somebody pinched it. And what I say is, them as pinched it, done her in.
Done her in? Done her in, did you say?
Yes, it's the new small talk. To do a person in means to kill them.
You surely don't believe your aunt was killed?
Do I not? Them she lived with would have killed her for a hat pin, let alone a hat.
But it can't have been right for your father to keep pouring spirits down her throat like that. But it might have killed her.
Not her. Gin was mother's milk to her. Besides, he'd poured so much down his own throat, he knew the good of it.
Do you mean to say he drank?
Drank? My word, something chronic. Here, what are you sniggering at?
The new small talk. You do it so awfully well.
If I was doing it proper, what was you laughing at? Have I said anything I oughtn't?
Not at all, my dear.
Well, that's a mercy anyhow. What I always say
I don't
is...
suppose there's enough time before the next rest of this bet. Come, my dear.
Well, I have a bet on number 7. I should be so happy if you would take it. You'll enjoy the race ever so much more.
That's very kind of you.
His name is Dover.
Dover.
There they are again, lining up to run. Now they're holding steady, they are ready for it.
It has begun.
Come on. Come on, Dover. Come on. Come on, Dover.
Officer, I know this is Wimpole Street, but could you tell me where 27A is?
Right there, sir.
Oh, thank you. Oh, are those for sale?
Yes, sir. 2 for 2d.
Here's a shilling.
Thank you kindly, sir.
Isn't it a heavenly day?
When she mentioned how her aunt bit off the spoon, she completely dug me in, and my heart went on a journey to the moon. When she told about her father and the gin, and I never saw a more enchanting farce than the moment when she shouted, "Move your blooming!"
Is Miss Doolittle at home?
Whom shall I say is calling?
Freddy Eynsford Hill. If she doesn't remember me, tell her I'm the chap who was sniggering at her.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and would you give her these?
Yes, sir.
You needn't rush. I want to drink in this street where she lives.
Yes.
I have often walked down this street before. The pavement always stayed beneath my feet before. All at once am I, several stories high, knowing I'm on the street where you live. Are the lilac trees in the heart of town? Can you hear a lark in any other part of town? Does enchantment pour out of every door? No, it's just on the street where you live. And oh, the towering feeling, just alone.
the time go by, I won't care if I can be here on the street where you live.
Mr. Ainsford Hill.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, sir. Miss Doolittle says she never wants to see anyone ever again.
But why? She was magnificent.
Magnificent? Do you have the right address?
Of course. Tell her I'll wait.
But it may be days, sir, even weeks.
But don't you see? I'll be happier here.
People stop and stare. They don't want me. There's nowhere else on earth that I would rather be. Let the time go by, I won't care if I can be here on the street where you
Higgins, if there's any mishap at the embassy tonight, if Miss Doolittle suffers any embarrassment, whatever, it's entirely on your head alone. I've been begging you to call off this experiment ever since Ascot.
Eliza can do anything.
I suppose she's discovered. I suppose she makes another ghastly mistake.
There were no horses at the ball, Pickering.
Think how agonizing it would be. God, if anything happened, I don't know what I'd do.
Well, you could always rejoin your regiment.
There's no time for flippancy, Higgins. The way you've driven her these last 6 weeks has exceeded all the bounds of... For God's sake, Higgins, stop pacing up and down. Can't you settle somewhere?
Have some port. It will quieten your nerves.
I'm not nervous. Where is it?
On the desk.
The car is here, sir.
Ah, thank you, Mrs. Pierce. Are you helping Eliza?
Yes, sir.
Helping it indeed, but the damn gown doesn't fit. I warned you about those French designers. We should have gone to a good English store where we knew everybody was on our side. Have some port.
No, thank you.
Are you so sure she'll retain all you've hammered into her?
We shall see.
Well, I suppose she doesn't.
Well, then I lose my bet.
You know, like I'll stand about you, Higgins, is your confounded complacency. In a moment like this, with so much at stake, it's utterly indecent that you don't need a little port. What about the girl? You act as if she doesn't matter at all.
Oh, rubbish, Pickering. Of course she matters. What on earth do you think I've been doing all these months? What could possibly matter more than to take a human being and change her into a different human being by creating a new speech for her? Why, it's filling up a deepest gulf that separates class from class and soul from soul. Oh, she matters immensely.
And with Eliza's entrance ready for the ball in shimmering white silk and fur, we reach the end of Act One of Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady. Annalene Beachy is Eliza Doolittle. Anthony Andrews, Professor Henry Higgins. James Fleet, Colonel Hugh Pickering. And Jenny Galloway, Mrs. Pierce. At Ascot, we encountered Sian Phillips as Mrs. Higgins and Julian Avenden as Freddie Eynsford Hill. Alan Armstrong plays Alfred P. Doolittle. John Wilson conducts the John Wilson Orchestra. Well, as you may have realised during the applause and laughter here at the Royal Albert Hall, all sorts of visual gags going on, including a machine that shoots flames high into the air when H is properly pronounced. And lots of funny walks, long faces and physical tricks during that grand social meeting at the races. Well, if you've just joined us, welcome. It's the second night of the BBC Proms in a weekend when the stage is very much to the fore, as Sir John Eliot Gardner conducting Debussy's Pelléas et Mélisande tomorrow evening. Every prom is preceded by an event across the road at the Royal College of Music, and we're going to bring you highlights of Proms Plus throughout the season here on Radio 3. In fact, that's what we're going to do right now for the next 20 minutes before Act 2 of My Fair Lady. My Fair Lady is based on George Bernard Shaw's play Pygmalion, which was the subject of tonight's Proms Plus, chaired by Matthew Sweet.
Tonight's prom is a musical theatre masterpiece from 1956, but it's based on material as old as the hills, specifically the hills on the island of Cyprus, where Ovid laid the tale of Pygmalion, the sculptor who loved his work so much he married it. In 1912, George Bernard Shaw hitched his name to the story. And it's now hard to think of Pygmalion and his creation Galatea without thinking of Professor Henry Higgins and the woman whom he tries to remake, Eliza Doolittle. We're going to explore the play with a cast whose names anyone would be happy to see in lights. Shaw's biographer, Michael Holroyd, and the historian Roy Foster, and bringing the play to life for us are the actors Rachel Sterling and Tim Pigott-Smith. Could we have found anyone better? Not bloody likely. In the myth of Pygmalion, the goddess Venus intervenes to bring life to an ivory statue, and everybody sort of lives reasonably happily ever after. Roy, what is Higgins's project? What does he want to do for or to Eliza?
Higgins's project is generally seen as a project based on class. He's going to get an uneducated flower girl and teach her to speak such perfect received English that she'll be mistaken for a duchess. He'll win his bet. But the question is, what'll happen to her? And that is what makes the play so fascinating, because what happens to her is that she turns out to be a creature of great natural intelligence and resource. And unlike in Pygmalion, she's not going to marry him, and she's going to find out the limitations of moving up a class and actually also losing your means of work. English people want this play to be about class. Shaw was an Irishman, and the Irish are much more interested in economics than class.
Michael, in the introduction, Shaw says that didactic plays are the only kind that are worth bothering with, really. What does he want to teach us?
The danger of being too didactic is one of the things I think he teaches us, and the fact that it's very difficult to have human relationships with people who you are teaching in a rather unsympathetic but expert way.
Roy, you said that you're rather disavowing the idea that class was an important part of that story, but surely, you know, this play is a product of 1912. This is a pretty kind of febrile time, isn't it, for questions of class and of gender?
Yes, it is, and of course class is a large part of it, because class and economics are intertwined. But you say 1912, Matthew, that's quite true. It's the time of the suffragette thing. It's the time when street traders are actually a very hot news issue. And it's a time when prostitution is a very hot issue. Shaw is fascinated by prostitution. Back to Pygmalion. Why does the sculptor in Ovid's fable want to make a fake woman? Because he believes all real women are whores. And why does Eliza keep saying, I'm a good girl, I'm a good girl? Why does she know what it means when somebody takes down something about her? The note taker is not who is Higgins actually taking down her voice pronunciation in the first act. She thinks that he's going to have her for soliciting men on the street. Shaw has already written a campaigning play about prostitution, Mrs. Warren's profession, in which he says, or I think probably in the preface he says, the prostitution isn't about men's licentiousness and women's depravity. It's about women of a certain class being undervalued, underpaid, and overworked. And that is, in a sense, the kind of economics that Liza's position is coming from. That's why I think it's a much more interesting play than I'm afraid My Fair Lady makes it out to be, which is all about class and romance.
Okay, well, let's have our first piece of performance from the play, which pits Professor Higgins against his creator, his mother, Mrs. Higgins, who will be played tonight by Rachel Sterling, and Professor Higgins by Tim Pigott-Smith.
I've picked up a girl.
Does that mean some girl has picked you up?
Not at all. God, I don't mean a love affair.
Oh, what a pity.
Why?
Well, you never fall in love with anyone under 45. When will you discover there are some rather nice-looking young women about?
Oh, I can't be bothered with young women. My idea of a lovable woman is something as like you as possible. Oh. I shall never get into the way of seriously liking young women. Some habits lie too deep to be changed. Besides, they're all idiots.
Do you know what you would do if you really loved me, Henry?
No bother, what? Marry, I suppose.
No, stop fidgeting and take your hands out of your pockets. That's a good boy. Now, tell me about the girl.
Well, she's coming to see you.
I don't remember asking her.
You didn't. I asked her. If you'd known her, you wouldn't have asked her.
Indeed? Why?
Well, it's like this. She's a common flower girl. I picked her off the curbstone.
And invited her to my at home?
No, that'll be all right. I've taught her to speak properly. And she has strict orders as to her behaviour. She has to keep to two subjects, the weather and everybody's health. Fine day, and how do, you know, and not let herself go on things in general. That'll be safe.
Safe? To talk about our health? About our insides? Perhaps about our outsides? How could you be so silly, Henry?
Thanks very much indeed, Tim Pigott-Smith and Rachel Sterling. Michael, would it be wrong to go looking for aspects of Shaw's biography in this relationship? Is his mother present here?
Well, biographers, of course, always think that this is relevant and is there. Higgins is not a pen portrait of Shaw, but he has, as I said, the same predicament. The good news is that Shaw loved his mother. The bad news is that she couldn't care for him at all. Not at all. And when she eventually left Dublin to go to London in the early 1870s, when Shaw, her son, was 15, 16, she took her two daughters and she left him with his semi-drunkard father, out-of-work father. And he felt for the rest of his life, really, in one way, that he was unlovable. He would have to create a new person outside himself called GBS, a public figure, who had, if not love, a lot of attention, and eventually quite a lot of money. And I think that this is at the center of this play. And what is strange outside the play is the first person he actually made love to, in the way that we would understand the word, was to his mother's best friend, someone who was over 45, and after his father had died, and he bought, with the money from his father's will, a new set of clothes, a new suit, from which he turned up. So it was really like the father and the mother all over again, only better this time.
Roy, that's that change jangling that we hear in that scene, what's that all about?
Well, it's probably about some form of sexual release, if you really want to look at it that way, because Higgins' sexuality is strangely arrested, and the exchange with his mother, in a sense, shows that. What Michael says is fascinating, because one of the stage directions for Mrs. Higgins is when she realizes it's her son who's come to see her, she is dismayed. You know, there's a rejection there. He has a form of what I might call, and I am an academic, academic Asperger's syndrome. You know, it's very common in places like Oxford, and he was based on, well, not based, but partly inspired by an Oxford don of phonetics. He is a sort of child who fidgets, who plays, who wants to be a confirmed bachelor all his life, whose idea of a perfect outcome at the end is when he suggests to Eliza that she lives with him and his friend, Colonel Pickering, like three old bachelors. So there's something really rather strange going on here, which but Michael
there
is now going
to
come in.
There is a sexual subtext, I think, to it, and you get it not quite so much in the words, but it's in the stage directions. I'd like just to quickly read some. Eliza tries to control herself. She's on the point of screaming. He comes to her. He pulls her up. She crisps her fingers frantically, gives a suffocated scream of fury, and instinctively darts her nails into his face. Higgins, catching her wrists, he throws her roughly into an easy chair. Liza, crushed by superior strength and weight. Higgins, thundering. Liza with bitter submission. There's something there.
But this is violence instead of love, which occurs throughout. And when he tells her, oh, all right, go off and marry someone, he says, marry some fool with a thick pair of lips to kiss you with and a thick pair of boots to kick you with. And that's his idea of marriage.
Which sounds like an excellent moment to go to the next performance from the play. Michael, you've chosen this scene from Act Four, a terrific argument between Eliza and Henry, a kind of lover's argument, although by this stage there's no such thing.
It's after the ball, so she's had a fantastic night and looks absolutely ravishing.
Diamond sparkling.
Well, it's over and done with, and now I can go to bed at last without dreading tomorrow. Good night. Put out the lights, Eliza. And tell Mrs. Pierce not to make coffee for me in the morning. I'll take tea. Girl, what the devil have I done with my slippers?
There are your slippers. And there. Take your slippers and may you never have a day's luck with them.
What on earth? What's the matter? Get up. Anything wrong?
Nothing wrong with you. I've won your bet for you, haven't I? That's enough for you. I don't matter, I suppose.
You won my bet, presumptuous insect. I won it. What did you throw those slippers at me for?
Because I wanted to smash your face. I'd like to kill you, you selfish brute. Why didn't you leave me where you picked me out of, in the gutter? You thank God it's all over and now you can throw me back again there, do you?
Yeah, the creature is nervous after all.
No!
How would you? Claws in, you cat. How dare you show your temper to me? Sit down and be quiet.
What's to become of me?
How the devil do I know what's to become of you? What does it matter what becomes of you?
You don't care. I know you don't care. You wouldn't care if I was dead. I'm nothing to you, not so much as them slippers.
Those slippers!
Those slippers! I didn't think it made any difference now.
So ferocious, isn't it, Michael?
This is very important to Shaw. In fact, he is rewriting the most important part of his early life. He was brought up in a ménage à trois. He had his father, George Shaw, who was the drunkard, and then there was this other man. The family were Protestant, but the other man was Catholic, and his name was Vander Lely, George Vander Lely, two Georges. He'd been called George after which one? Was he legitimate or illegitimate? What he is trying to do, always when he speaks of this, is to say that the relationship between his mother and Vander Lely, who taught his mother not how to speak, but how to sing. She had a mezzo-soprano voice, and she became the right-hand woman of his musical society. He wanted that to be an aesthetic and an economic relationship, not a sexual relationship, which made him illegitimate. So in this, there is great difficulty in getting Higgins, who is, in effect, really, George Vander Lely in many respects. He cannot marry her.
Right.
Yes, I think that's very characteristically perceptive, and I think it fits with the patterning of relationships in this play. Not only man-woman relationships, but father-child relationships. And the father-child relationship, which is also important, funny, bitter, sad, is between the wonderful character of Eliza's father, the philosophizing dustman, Mr. Doolittle, and his daughter, whom he is prepared to sell to Higgins in a hilarious but chilling exchange, where he says he can't afford middle-class morality. Of course he's prepared to sell her for £5. And when Colonel Pickering interposes, horrified, and says, Mr. Higgins's intentions are entirely honorable. Of course they are. If they weren't, I'd charge 50. And then and he explains that this may seem immoral to them, but to someone of his class and economic position is perfectly logical. It's about the illogic of capitalism, many of the best exchanges in this play.
Rachel, I want to bring you into this discussion. You've played Eliza on stage, a character that undergoes a metamorphosis every night. How much does Shaw help you manage those changes?
He manages it. It's perfect. It's the most perfect part, the beginning, middle, and the end. The guttersnipe she begins as, and the perfect articulate match to Higgins that she ends up as. It's the most perfectly arced part to play, and deeply satisfying as a result. And I'm salivating thinking about it.
But do you ever lose sight of the idea that Eliza is a construction of some sort?
She's not a construction. She absolutely isn't a construction. What he does is he peels away her lack of vocabulary and reveals this incredibly articulate, intelligent, forward-thinking creature. But she was always that all along. That's what I took her to be. I don't think he created anything. I think he unveiled what was already there.
And the howl. The Eliza Doolittle howl. Because that, I mean, on the page, that does look like something that could be a musical gag or a line from a Punch cartoon.
And it isn't. It's her vocabulary as it is then. And in that sentence, she's saying all the things we can't say on BBC Three right now. It's an entire vocabulary of how she feels about this man who's taking notes of her at the time. I think it's one of the most articulate things in the play. I mean, it's quite the first time you're doing a read-through or you come to it and you see it coming up, it's like Beecher's Brook. And you go, oh, my goodness, I'm going to have to make that noise in a minute. And then when you do, it's the most delicious sound to make.
Are they the test of a good Eliza?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Sounds. Yeah, and a good gorn. Do you want me to...
Oh, yes, let's hear one.
I have to move back from the microphone because it's so loud. It goes like this.
Rachel and I were both in a Peter Hall production at different times, the same production at different times, and Peter's great strength was that he really thought this was about social manipulation, and he took it very, very seriously, and it just got funnier and funnier.
Roy Foster.
I'm very glad that point's been made. I saw that Peter Hall production, and I thought it was the best, and I'm not just saying this because two people are in it on the stage, it is the best Pygmalion I've ever seen, because it got the darkness and the sadness of, especially of Eliza's situation towards the end. And I think what Peter Hall said was that it was a play about heartbreak. And interestingly, when Shaw himself, then not very far advanced as a writer of plays himself, saw his fellow Irishman Oscar Wilde's smash hit, The Importance of Being Earnest, in 1895, he didn't like it because he said it was a heartless play. And he said that a great comedy had to have heart. And I think that's exactly what Pygmalion has.
I think that he was very vulnerable about this play because, after all, it was written for Stella Campbell, with whom, now that his mother had died, he was free to fall in love with and really did so. And it was a tragedy for him. During the rehearsal, she vanished for 3 days and she came back married to someone else, someone with the name George again, Cornwallis West, like Ainsford Hill, a hyphenated nobody. And he really felt that all those things he had tried to put off feeling, he now felt.
Was that in some way a response to the play itself, her action?
No, it was response to Cornwallis West having the day before got his divorce.
But one would like to think in a way that Stella Campbell, seeing Eliza's dilemma and wanting to be loved, thought Eliza had the sense to choose Freddie Ainsford Hill, who knows how to love her, instead of this astonishing, didactic, strange genius who relates to other people in an arrested way,
which she may
have seen Shaw as.
Just at that point, he had left that GBS person behind. He dared to come out from that. And it didn't work. That's the sad thing.
Oh, God, I wish I was dead.
Why? In heaven's name, why? Listen to me, Eliza. All this irritation is purely subjective.
I don't understand. I'm too ignorant.
It's only imagination, low spirits and nothing else. Nobody's hurting you, nothing's wrong. Now, you go to bed like a good girl and sleep it off. Have a little cry and say your prayers, and that'll make you comfortable.
I heard your prayers. Thank God it's all over.
Well, don't you thank God it's all over? Now you're free and you can do what you like.
What am I fit for? What have you left me fit for? Where am I to go? What am I to do? What's to become of me?
Oh, that's what's worrying you, is it? Well, I shouldn't bother about it if I were you. I should imagine you won't have much difficulty in settling yourself somewhere or other, though I hadn't quite realized you're going away. You might marry, you know. You see, Eliza, all men are not confirmed old bachelors like me and the Colonel. Most men are the marrying sort, poor devils. And you're not bad looking. It's quite a pleasure to look at you sometimes. Well, not now, of course, because you're crying and looking as ugly as the very devil. But when you're all right and quite yourself, you're what I should call attractive. That is to people in the marrying line, you understand. Now, you go to bed and have a good, nice rest and then get up and look at yourself in the glass and you won't feel so cheap. I dare say my mother could find some chap or other who'd do very well.
We were above that at the corner of Tottenham Court Road.
What do you mean?
I sold flowers. I didn't sell myself. Now you've made a lady of me, I'm not fit to sell anything else. I wish you'd left me where you found me.
Shaw wrote with typical disingenuousness after it had been this fabulous success. He said, "This play has pleased so many different kinds of people that there must be something radically wrong with it." But I have never been able to discover what it was.
That's the last bit I can.
In fact, of course, it pleases so many people because there's something radically right about it, I think.
Thank you so much. Okay, well, we have to bring the curtain down there at this point. A great shame, because enjoyable conversations like this between authors, academics and hackers hardly ever happen. My thanks to Roy Foster and Michael Holroyd, Tim Bickett-Smith and Rachel Sterling, and I suspect that you'll want to give them yours too.
Matthew Sweet presented this evening's Proms Plus literary event, and the producer was Allegra McElroy. Well, welcome back, live to the Royal Albert Hall this Saturday evening, where we're about to return you to London a century ago and Act Two of Lerner and Lowe's comedy of class, My Fair Lady. Anthony Andrews is starring tonight in the role that he played in The West End. It's a show that he is a huge fan of.
I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that it's the greatest musical ever written. It has such a wonderful combination of words and music. Not surprisingly, because an awful lot of it is the original Bernard Shaw. Even within the lyrics, Alan J. Lerner had this incredible skill to be able to marry the two. I think that's why it's such a joy to play, because you get some very deep, meaningful scenes and some very funny ones too, interspersed with all this fabulous music.
Anthony Andrews, who plays Henry Higgins opposite Annalene Beechey's Eliza Doolittle here at the Proms. Joining James Fleet as Colonel Pickering, Alan Armstrong as Alfred P. Doolittle, Sean Phillips playing Mrs. Higgins, Julian Ovenden as Freddie Ainsford Hill, and Jenny Galloway as Mrs. Pierce. John Wilson is in charge. It's the John Wilson Orchestra. Here he is to conduct Act Two of Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady.
Reginald and Lady Tarrington. Professor Sultan Kapathi. Colonel Hugh Pickering.
What happened?
Higgins said, Madam Ambassador, may I introduce Miss Eliza Doolittle? And Madam Ambassador said, how do you do? And Eliza came right back with, how do you do?
Is that all?
No. When it was my turn, both the ambassador and his wife said to me, Colonel Pickering, who is that captivating creature with Professor Higgins?
What did you say?
Well, I was stopped for a moment. Then I collected myself, and I said, Eliza Doolittle.
That was very quick thinking, yeah. Colonel.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Mrs. Higgins. Do you think Eliza will make it?
Oh, I hope so. I've grown so fond of that girl.
Professor Henry Higgins!
Hi! Maestro! Maestro! You remember me?
No, I don't. Who the devil are you?
I am your pupil, your first, best, and greatest pupil. I am Zoltan Kapadi, that marvelous boy. I make your name across Europe. You teach me phonetics. You cannot forget me.
Why don't you shave?
I do not have your imposing appearance, your figure, your brow. No one notices me when I shave.
Where did you get all those old coins?
Decorations for languages. The Queen of Transylvania is here this evening. I am indispensable to her at these international parties. I know 32 languages. I know everyone in Europe. No imposter escaped my detection. And now, Professor, you must introduce me to that glorious creature you escort here this evening. She fascinates everyone, not since Lily Langtry came to London and everyone...
His Excellency, Dr. Themistocles Stephanos.
This so-called Greek diplomat pretend he cannot speak English, but he cannot deceive me. He is the son of a Yorkshire watchmaker. He speaks English so villainously, he dare not utter a single word of it without betraying his origin. He does not deceive me. I help him to pretend. I make him pay for the nose. I make them all pay. I look forward to meeting your lady.
Higgins, I say.
Where's Eliza?
Upstairs. Last minute adjustments.
I say, Higgins, let's not risk it. Let's collect her and leave immediately.
Do you think it wise to stay?
Wise to stay? Why ever not? If he finds her out, I lose my bet.
Miss Eliza Doolittle.
Professor, you must introduce me.
Thank you.
achievement.
Oh, silly notion. If I hadn't packed myself to do it, I'd have chucked the whole thing up 2 months ago.
Absolutely fantastic.
A lot of tomfoolery.
Higgins, I salute you.
Lots of silly people don't know their own silly business.
Turned out, man, you did it. You did it. You did it. You said that you would do it, and indeed you did. I thought that you would rue it. I doubted you'd do it. But now I must admit it, that succeed you did. You should get a medal, or we even made a knight.
It was nothing. Really nothing.
All alone, you hurdled every obstacle in sight.
Now wait. Now wait. Give credit where it's due. A lot of the glory goes to you.
When you're the one who did it, who did it. The sturdiest you brought her, not a second did you fault her. There's no doubt about it. You did it. Oh, I must have aged a year tonight. At times I thought I'd die of fright. Never was there a momentary lull.
Shortly after we came in, I knew at once that we'd easily win. And after that, I found it deadly dull.
You should have heard the oohs and ahs. Everyone wondering who she was.
You'd think they'd never seen a lady before.
And when the Prince of Transylvania asked to meet her and gave his arm to lead her to the floor, I said to him, you did it, you did it, you did it. They thought she was ecstatic and so damn down is contrived. And they never knew that you.
Oh, well, thank heaven for Sultan Kapathi. If it weren't for him, I think I'd have died of boredom.
Kapathi, that dreadful Hungarian, was he there?
Oh, yes. He was there, all right, and up to his old tricks. That blackguard who uses the science of speech, more to blackmail and swindle than teach. He made it the devilish business of his to find out who this Miss Doolittle is. Every time we turned around, there he was, that hairy hound from Budapest. Never leaving us alone, never have I ever known a ruder pest. Finally, I decided it was foolish not to let him have his chance with us. So I stepped aside and let him dance with her. Oozing charm to every pore, he oiled his way around the floor. Every trick that he could play, he used to strip her mask away. And when at last the dance was done, he glowed as though he knew he'd won. And with a voice too eager and a smile too broad, he announced to the hostess that she was a fraud.
No.
Jawohl. English is too good, he said, which clearly indicates that she is foreign. Whereas others are instructed in their native language, English people. And although she may have studied with an expert dialectician or grammarian, I can tell that she was born Hungarian! Not only Hungarian, but of royal blood. She is a princess. Her blood is said as bluer than the Danube is her ever was. Royalty is absolutely written on her face. She thought I must take an introduction, the I never was. How could she deceive another member of her race? I know which language on the map, said he, and she's Hungarian as the first Hungarian rhapsody.
Bravo!
Yeah.
well, thank heaven that's all over. Now at last I can go to bed without dreading tomorrow.
Good night, Mr. Higgins.
Good night, Mrs. Pierce.
I think I shall turn into Higgins. It's been a great occasion. Good night.
Good night, Pick. Oh, Mrs. Pierce! Damn. I wanted to tell her that I want coffee in the morning instead of tea. Oh, leave a little note for her, would you, Eliza? No. I'll lose my head eventually. What the devil have I done with my slippers?
There are your slippers! And there! Take your slippers and may you never have a day's luck with them!
What on earth? What's the matter? Is anything wrong?
Nothing wrong with you. I've won your bet for you, haven't I? That's enough for you. I don't matter, I suppose.
You won my bet, you presumptuous insect. I won it. What the devil did you throw those slippers at me for?
Because I wanted to smash your face. I'd like to kill you, you selfish brute. Why didn't you leave me where you picked me out of, in the gutter? You thank God that now it's all over and you can throw me back again there, do you?
Oh, so the creature is nervous after all. Claws in, you cat! How dare you show your temper to me! Sit down and be quiet!
What's to become of me? What's to become of
me? How the devil do I know what's to become of you? What does it matter what becomes of you?
You don't care. I know you don't care. You wouldn't care if I was dead. I'm nothing to you. Not so much as them slippers.
Those slippers!
I didn't think it made any difference now.
Why have you suddenly begun going on like this? May I ask if you complain of your treatment here?
No.
Has anybody behaved badly toward you, Colonel Pickering, Mrs. Pierce?
No.
Well, you can't pretend that I have treated you badly.
No.
Oh, well, I'm very relieved to hear that. Oh, well, perhaps you're tired after the strain of the day. Have a chocolate.
No. Thank you.
Well, it is only natural you should be anxious. But it's all over now. Nothing more to worry about, eh?
No. Nothing more for you to worry about. Oh, God, I wish I was dead.
Why? In heaven's name, why? Oh, listen, Eliza. All this irritation is merely subjective.
I don't understand. I'm too ignorant.
It's only irritation. Nothing wrong. No one's hurting you. Listen, you go to bed. Sleep it off like a good girl. Have a good cry. Say your prayers. You'll feel more comfortable.
I heard your prayers. Thank God it's all over.
Well, don't you? Thank God it's all over. Now you're free. You can do whatever you want.
What am I fit for? What have you left me fit for? Where am I to go? What am I to do? What's to become of me?
Oh, that's what's worrying you, is it? Oh, well, I would imagine you won't have much difficulty in settling yourself somewhere or other. I hadn't quite realized that you were going away. You know, you might marry, you know. You see, Eliza, not all men are confirmed old bachelors like me and the Colonel. Most men are the marrying sort. Poor devils. And you're not bad looking. You're quite a pleasure to look at sometimes. Not now, of course, because you've been crying and you look as ugly as the very devil. When you're all right, when you're quite yourself, you're what I might call, well, attractive. Oh, come on, Eliza. You go to bed, get a good night's sleep, get up in the morning, look at yourself in the glass. You won't feel so cheap. You know, I dare say my mother could find some chap or other who would do very well.
We were above that in Covent Garden.
What do you mean?
I sold flowers. I didn't sell myself. Now that you've made a lady of me, I'm not fit to sell anything else.
Oh, tosh, Eliza. Don't insult human relations by dragging all that cant about buying and selling into it. You needn't marry the fellow if you don't want to.
What else am I to do?
Lots of things. Well, what about the old idea of the florist shop? Pickering could set you up in one. He's pots of money. And he'll have to pay for all those togs you've been wearing. And that, together with the hire of the jewellery, could put a big hole in you. £200. Oh, come on, Eliza. You're all right. Oh, well, I must off to bed. I'm devilish sleepy. I was looking for something. Now, what was it?
Your slippers.
Oh, yes. You shied them at me.
Before you go, sir.
Sir?
Do my clothes belong to me or to Colonel Pickering?
Well, what the devil use would they be to Pickering? And why bother about that in the middle of the night?
I want to know what I may take away with me. I don't want to be accused of stealing.
Stealing? Oh, you ought not to have said that, Eliza. That shows a want of feeling.
I'm sorry. I'm only a common, ignorant girl, and in my station I have to be careful. There can't be any feelings between the like of you and the like of me. Please, will you tell me what belongs to me and what doesn't?
You may take the whole damn houseful if you like, except the jewels, they're hired. Now, will that satisfy you?
Wait, please. You take these with you. I don't want to run the risk of their being missing.
Hand them over. If these belong to me instead of the jeweler, I'd ram them down your ungrateful throat.
This ring isn't the jeweler's. It's the one you bought me in Brighton. I don't want it now. Don't you hit me!
Hit you, you infamous creature! How dare you accuse me of such a thing! It's you who have hit me. You've wounded me to the heart.
I'm glad. I've got a little of my own back anyhow.
You have caused me to lose my temper. Something that's hardly ever happened to me before. I prefer to say nothing more tonight. I'm going to bed.
You'd better leave your own note for Mrs. Pierce about the coffee, for it won't be done by me.
Damn Mrs. Pierce. Damn the coffee. And damn you. And damn my own folly for having lavished my hard-earned knowledge and the treasure of my regard and intimacy on a heartless guttersnipe.
Lilac trees I spend most of my time here. Don't laugh at me, Miss Doolittle, but
Freddy,
this is the only...
you don't think I'm a heartless gutter snipe, do you?
Oh, no, darling. How can you imagine such a thing? You know how I feel. I've written you 2 and 3 times a day telling you. Sheets and sheets. Speak, and the world is full of singing, and I am winging higher than the birds. Touch, and my heart begins to crumble, the heavens tumble, darling, and I'm...
Words, 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 I'm so sick of words. I get words all day through, first from him, now from you. Is that all you blighters can do? Don't talk of stars burning above. If you're in love, show me. Tell me no dreams filled with desire. If you're on fire, show me. Here we are together in the middle of the night. Don't talk of spring, just hold me tight. Anyone who's ever been in love will tell you that. This is no time for a chat. Your lips longed for my touch. Don't say how much. Show me, show me. Don't talk of love lasting through time. Make me no undying vow. Show me now. Sing me no song, read me no rhyme. Don't waste my time. Show me. Don't make a speech, show me. Never do I ever want to hear another word. There isn't one I haven't heard. Here we are together in what ought to be a dream. Say one more word and I'll scream. Haven't your arms hungered for mine? Please don't explain, show me, show me.
Some
Can I help you?
Do you mind if I warm my hands?
Go right ahead, miss.
Yes?
Sorry, miss. For a second there, I thought you were someone else.
Who?
Sorry, ma'am. Early morning light playing tricks with me eyes.
Can I get you a taxi, miss? A lady like you shouldn't be walking around London this time in the morning.
No, thank you.
Good morning, miss.
Someone's head resting on my knee. Warm and tender as he can be. Who takes good care of me? Oh, would and be lovely, 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 lovely.
Night to you, George. Time to go, Alfie.
Oh, do come again, Mr. Doolittle. We value your patronage.
Thank you, my good man. Here, take the missus a trip to Brighton.
Oh. Thank you very much, Mr. Doolittle.
Father.
Ah, you see, Harry? He has no mercy. Sent her down to spy on me in me misery, he did. Me own flesh and blood. Well, I'm miserable, all right. You can tell him that straight.
What are you talking about? What are you all dressed up for?
As if you didn't know. Go on back to that Wimpole Street devil and tell him what he done to me.
What has he done to you?
He's ruined me, that's all. Destroyed me happiness. Tied me up and delivered me into the hands of middle-class morality. And don't you defend him. Was it him or was it not him that wrote an American blighter named Wonderfeller and that was giving $5 million to found moral reform societies and tell him the most original moralist in England was Mr. Alfred P. Doolittle, a common dustman?
That sounds like one of his jokes.
Yeah, you might call it a joke. You put the lid on me right enough. The bloke died and left me £4,000 a year in his blooming will.
Come on, Alfie. In a couple of hours, we've got to be at the church.
Church?
Yes, church. The deepest cut of all. Why do you think I'm dressed up like a ruddy pallbearer? Your stepmother wants to marry me. Now I'm respectable, she wants to be respectable.
If that's how you feel, why don't you give the money back?
That's the tragedy of it, Eliza. It's easy to say, chuck it, but I haven't the nerve. We're all intimidated. Yeah. Intimidated, Eliza, that's what we are. And that's what I am. Balked up.
Well, he's not my precious professor.
Ah, oh, sent you back, has he? You see, first he shoves me in the middle class, then he chucks you out for me to support you. All part of his plan. But you double-cross him, Eliza. Don't you come home to me. Don't you take tuppence off me. You stand on your own 2 feet. You're a lady now, and you can do it.
Eliza, it's getting awfully cold in that taxi.
I say, you want to come and see me turned off this morning? St. George's, Hanover Square, 10 o'clock. I wouldn't advise it, but you're welcome.
No, thank you, Dad.
Are you all finished here?
Yes, Freddie. I'm all finished here. about Dad.
Come on, Alfie. How much time do I have left?
There's just a few more hours. That's all the time you've got. A few more hours before they tie the knot.
There are drinks and girls all over London, and I've got to track them down in just a few more hours. I'm getting married in the morning. Ding-dong, the bells are gonna chime. Pull out the stopper, let's have a whopper, but get me to the church on time. I've got to be there in the morning, spruced up and looking in me prime. Girls, come and kiss me, show how you'll miss me, but get me to the church on time. If I am dancing, roll up the floor. If I am whistling, meet me at the door. Oh, I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are gonna chime. Kick up a rumpus, but don't lose the compass, and get me to the church.
Get into the church.
For God's sake, get me to the church on time.
He's getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are gonna chime. Some bloke who's able, lift up the table, and get me to the church on time. If he is flying, then shoot him down. If he is wooing, get her out of town. Four minutes, get him married in the morning. Ding dong, that's a gonna chime.
Feather and Tommy, call out the army, and get me to the church. Get me to the church. The gold side, get me to the church.
Getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are gonna chime.
Pull out the stopper, let's have a whopper, but get me to the church on time.
He's gonna be there in the morning, switched up and looking in his prime.
Girls, come and kiss me, shout out your queen, but get me to the church on time. I am dancing. If I am whistling, meet me at the door.
For he's getting married in the morning. Ding dong,
chuck me and tie me, stack me and Miley, and get me to the church.
Get into the church.
For God's sake, get me to the church.
Girls, come and kiss him, show how you miss him, but get him to the church on time.
Oh. to bed now. Rolling in, he's smearing up the sky.
London is waking, daylight is breaking.
Good luck, punk shove.
The bells are gonna chime.
Hail and salute me, then all off to boot me, and get into the church, get into the church, for God's sake, get into the church. On time.
Where to send her clothes?
I told you, sir. She took them all with her.
Pickering!
What?
Here's a confounded thing. Eliza has bolted.
Bolted?
Yes, bolted. And Mrs. Pierce let her go without telling me a thing about it.
Well, I'm dashed.
Well, what am I to do? I got tea this morning instead of coffee. I don't know where anything is. I've no idea what appointments I've got.
Eliza would know.
Well, of course she'd know, but she's gone, damn it!
Did either of you gentlemen frighten her last night?
Well, you were there, Mrs. Pierce. We hardly said a word to her. Higgins, did you bully her after I went to bed?
It was quite the other way around. She threw the slippers at me. I never gave her the slightest provocation. The slippers just came bang at my head before I'd uttered a word. And she used the most awful language. I was shocked.
Well, I'm dashed.
I don't understand it. We've always shown her every consideration. She said so herself.
Well, I'm dashed.
Oh, Pickering, for God's sake, stop being dashed and do something.
What?
Well, telephone the police. What are they there for, in heaven's name?
But Mr. Higgins, you can't give Eliza's name to the police as if she were a thief or a lost umbrella.
Why not? I want to find her. She belongs to me. I paid £5 for her.
Yeah, quite right. Scotland Yard, please. May I have some coffee, Mrs. Pierce?
Yes, sir.
Good morning, old chap. Colonel Hugh Pickering here, 27A Wimpole Street. I want to report a missing person. Anything you can do to assist in the recovery will be frightfully appreciated. I'm not without influence, and I'll see to it that you're... Yes. Eliza Doolittle. Yes. About 21. Well, I should say about 5'7". Her eyes.
Brown.
Brown. Her hair. Well, it's a rather neutral, nondescript sort of colour. I say it's more on the.
Brown.
You heard what he said. It's brown. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, this is her residence. Between 3 and 4 in the morning. No. No. No relation at all. No. Let's just say a good friend. Now, see here, my good man, I'm not at all pleased with the tenor of that question. What the girl does here is our affair. Your affair is to get her back so she can continue doing it.
What in all of heaven could have prompted her to go after such a triumph at the ball? What could have depressed her? What could have possessed her? I cannot understand the wretch at all.
Higgins, I have an old school chum at the Home Office. Perhaps he can help. I'll call him. Whitehall 7244, yes?
Women are irrational, that that's all there is to that. Their heads are full of cotton, hay and rags. They're nothing but exasperating, irritating, vacillating, calculating, agitating, maddening and infuriating hands.
Brewster Budgeon, please. Yes, yes, I'll wait.
Pickering, why can't a woman be more like a man? Why can't a woman be more like a man? Men are so honest, so thoroughly square, eternally noble, historically fair. When you win, we'll always give your back a pat. Now, why can't a woman be like that? Why does everyone do what the others do? Can't a woman learn to use her head? Why do they do everything their mothers do? Why can't they grow up well like their fathers instead? Why can't a woman take after a man? Men are so pleasant, so easy to please. Whenever you're with them, you're always at ease. Would you be slighted if I didn't speak for hours?
Of course not.
Would you be livid if I had a drink or two?
Nonsense.
Would you be wounded if I never sent you flowers?
Never.
Well, why can't a woman be like you? One man in a million may shout a bit. Now and then there's one with slight defects. One perhaps whose truthfulness you doubt a bit. But by and large we are a marvellous sex. Why can't a woman behave like a man? Men are so friendly, good-natured and kind. A better companion you never would find. If I were hours late for dinner, would you bellow?
Of course not.
If I forgot your silly birthday, would you fuss?
Nonsense.
Would you complain if I took out another fellow?
Never.
Well, why can't a woman be like us?
Brewster Budgeon, please. Yes. Boozy! You'll never, 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 never guess who this is. Yes, 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 it is. By George, what a memory. Yes, how are you, old chap? It's so good to hear your voice again. 30 years, is it really? Yes. Yeah, oh, yeah. Oceans of water, yes. Yeah, Boozy, old chap, I'll tell you why I called. Something rather unpleasant has happened at this end. Could I come right over and see you? Oh, good, yeah, I'll be right there. Thank you, Boozy. I'm going over to the Home Office, Mrs. Pierce.
Oh, I do hope you find her, Colonel Pickering. Mr. Higgins will miss her.
Mr. Higgins will miss her. Blast, Mr. Higgins. I'll miss her.
Pickering! Pickering! Oh, Mrs. Pierce, where's the Colonel?
He's gone to the Home Office, sir.
There you are, you see. I'm disturbed. He runs for help. Now there's a good fellow. Mrs. Pierce, you're a woman. Why can't a woman be more like a man? Men are so decent, such regular chaps. Ready to help you through any mishaps. Ready to buck you up whenever you are glum. Why can't a woman be a chum? Why is thinking something women never do? Why is logic never even tried? Straightening out their hair is all they ever do. Why can't they straighten tongue out the mess that's inside? Why can't a woman be more like a man? If I were a woman who'd been to a ball, been hailed as a princess by one and by all, would I start weeping like a bathtub overflowing? Or carry on as though my home were in a tree? Would I run off and never tell me where I'm going? Why can't a woman be like me? Thank you.
to say, after you did this wonderful thing for them without making a single mistake, they just sat there and didn't say a word, never petted you or admired you or told you how splendid you'd been.
Not a word.
Oh, that's simply appalling. I should not have thrown the slippers at him. I should have thrown the fire irons.
Mother! Mother!
I thought it wouldn't be long. Stay where you are, my dear.
Mother, where the devil are you?
Remember, last night you not only danced with a prince, you behaved like a princess.
Mother, the damnedest thing has happened. You?
How do you do, Professor Higgins? Are you quite well? But of course you are. You are never ill. Would you care for some tea?
Don't you dare try that game on me. I taught it to you. Now get up and come home, and don't be a fool. You've caused me enough trouble for one morning.
Very nicely put, Henry. No woman could resist such an invitation.
Well, how did this baggage get to be here in the first place?
Eliza came to see me, and I was delighted to have her. And if you don't promise to behave yourself, I shall have to ask you to leave.
What do you mean to say I have to put on my Sunday manners for this thing that I created out of the squashed cabbage leaves of Covent Garden?
Yes, dear. That is precisely what I mean.
I'll see her damned first. Come along!
How did you ever learn manners with my son around?
It was very difficult. I should never have known how ladies and gentlemen behave if it hadn't been for Colonel Pickering. Ah! He always showed me that he felt and thought about me as if I was something better than a common flower girl. You see, Mrs. Higgins, apart from the things one can pick up, the difference between a lady and a flower girl is not how she behaves, but how she is treated. I shall always be a flower girl to Professor Higgins, because he always treats me as a flower girl and always will. But I know that I shall always be a lady to Colonel Pickering, because he always treats me as a lady and always will.
Please don't grind your teeth, Henry.
The bishop is here, madam. Shall I show him in?
The bishop and the professor? Heavens, no, I'll be excommunicated. I'll see him in the library.
Yes, madam.
Eliza, if my son begins to break things, I give you full permission to have him evicted. Henry, dear, if I were you, I should stick to two subjects, the weather and your health.
Well, Eliza, you had a bit of your own back, as you call it. Have you had enough? Are you going to be reasonable? Or do you want any more?
You want me back only to pick up your slippers, put up with your tempers, and fetch and carry for you.
I haven't said I want you back at all.
Oh, indeed. And what are we talking about?
About you, not about me. If you come back, I shall treat you exactly as I've always treated you. I can't change my nature. I've no intention of changing my manners. My manners are exactly the same as Colonel Pickering's.
That's not true. He treats a flower girl as if she was a duchess.
Yes, and I treat a duchess as though she were a flower girl.
Oh, I see. The same to everybody.
Just so, Eliza. You see, the great secret is not having good manners or bad manners or any particular sort of manners, but having the same manner to all human souls.
Amen.
The question is, Eliza, not whether I've treated you badly, but whether you ever heard me treat anybody else better.
I don't care how you treat me. I don't mind your swearing at me. I shouldn't mind a black eye. I've had one before this, but I won't be passed over.
Then get out of my way, because I won't stop for you. You talk about me as though I were a motorbus.
So you are a motorbus. All bounce and go and no consideration for anyone. But I can get along without you. Don't think I can't.
Oh, I know you can. I told you you could. I don't suppose you've ever given any thought to whether I can get along without you.
Don't try to get around me. You'll have to.
And so I shall, without you or any soul on earth. But I have missed you, Eliza. I confess that. I've learned something from your idiotic notions. I confess it both humbly and gratefully.
Well, you have my voice on your gramophone. When you feel lonely without me, you can turn it on. It's got no feelings to hurt.
I can't turn your soul on.
Oh, you are a devil. You can twist the heart in a girl as easily as some can twist her arm to hurt her. What am I to come back for?
For the fun of it! That's why I took you on.
And you may throw me out tomorrow if I don't do everything you want me to?
Yes, and you may walk out tomorrow if I don't do everything you want me to.
And live with my father?
Yes, or sell flowers.
If only I could.
Well, you can always marry Pickering.
I wouldn't marry you if you asked me, and you're nearer my age than what he is.
Than he is.
I'll talk as I like. You're not my teacher now. That's not what I want from you, and don't you think it. I've always had chaps enough wanting me that way. Freddie Hill writes to me twice and three times a day, sheets and sheets.
Oh, in short, you want me to be as infatuated with you as he is that it?
No, I don't. That's not what the sort of feeling I want from you.
Then what in heaven's name are we arguing about?
I want a little kindness. I know I'm a common, ignorant girl, and you a book-learned gentleman. But I am not dirt under your feet. What I done, what I did, was not for the dresses and the taxis. I did it because we were pleasant together. And I came to care for you. Not to want you to make love to me and not forgetting the difference between us, but more friendly-like.
Yes. That's just how I feel. And how Pickering feels. Eliza, you're a fool.
It's not a proper answer to give me.
Well, it's the only one you're going to get till you stop being a plain idiot. You find me cold, unfeeling, and selfish, don't you? Oh, very well, be off with you to the sort of people you like. Marry some sentimental hog or other with pots of money and a thick pair of lips to kiss you with and a thick pair of boots to kick you with. If you can't appreciate what you've got, you better go and find what you can appreciate.
I can't talk to you. You turn everything against me. I'm always in the wrong. But don't think you have me under your feet to be trampled on and talked down. I'll marry Freddie, I will. Just as soon as I'm able to support him.
Freddie? That idiot who couldn't get a job as an errand boy even if he had the guts to try for it? Woman, don't you understand? I've made you a consort for a king!
Freddie loves me. That makes him king enough for me. I don't want him to work. He wasn't brought up to it as I was. I'll go and be a teacher.
Ugh, what will you teach in heaven's name?
What you taught me. I'll teach phonetics.
Ah, ha, ha.
I'll offer myself as an assistant to that brilliant Hungarian.
What? That imposter, that humbug, that toadying ignoramus? Teach him my methods? You take one step in that direction, and I'll wring your neck, you hear me?
Ring away! What do I care? I knew you'd strike me one day. Aha. That's done you, Henry Higgins, it has. Now I don't care that for your bullying and your big talk. What a fool I was. What a dominated fool. To think you were the earth and sky. What a fool I was. What an addle-pated fool. What a mutton-headed dolt was I. No, my reverberating friend, you are not the beginning and the end.
You impudent pussy. There isn't an idea in your head or a word in your mouth that I haven't put there.
There'll be spring every year without you. England still will be here without you. There'll be fruit on the tree and a shore by the sea. There'll be crumpets and tea without you. Art and music will thrive without you. Somehow Keats will survive without you. And there still will be rain on that plain down in Spain. Even that will remain without you. I can do without you. You dear friend who talk so well. You can go to Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire. They can still rule the land without you. Windsor Castle will stand without you. And without my
much ado we can all muddle through without you.
Brazen hussy.
Without your pulling it, the tide comes in. Without your twirling it, the earth can spin. Without your pushing them, the clouds roll by. If they can do without you, Becky, so can I. I shall not feel alone without you. I can stand on my own without you. So go back in your shell. I can do bloody well without you.
George, I really did it. I did it. I did it. I said I'd wake a woman, and indeed I did. I knew I could do it. I knew it. I knew it. I said I'd make a woman and succeed. I did. Oh, Eliza, you are magnificent. 5 minutes ago, you were a millstone round my neck. Now you're a tower of strength, a consort battleship. Oh, I like you like this.
Goodbye, Professor Higgins. I shall not be seeing you again.
Mother! Mother!
What is it, Henry? What has happened?
She's gone.
Yes, dear. What did you expect?
Well, what am I to do?
Do without, I suppose.
And so I shall. If the Higgins oxygen burns up her little lungs, let her seek some stuffiness that suits her. She's an owl, sickened by a few days in my sunshine. Oh, very well, let her go. I can do without her. I can do without anybody. I've got my own soul, my own spark of divine fire.
Bravo, Eliza.
And accustomed to her face. She almost makes the day begin. I've grown accustomed to the tune. She whistles night and noon. Her smiles, her frowns, her ups, her downs are second nature to me now. Like breathing out, breathing in. I was serenely independent and content before we met. Surely I can always be that way again. And yet, I've grown accustomed to her looks, accustomed to her voice, accustomed to her face. Marry Freddy? What an infantile idea. What a heartless, wicked, brainless thing to do. But she'll regret it. She'll regret it. It's doomed before they even take that vow. I can see her now, Mrs. Freddy Eynsford Hill, in a wretched little flat above a store. I can see her now, not a penny in the till, and a bill collector beating at the door. She'll try to teach the things I taught her, and end up selling flowers instead, begging for her bread and water, while her husband has his breakfast in bed. In a year or so, when she's prematurely grey, and the blossom in her cheek has turned to chalk, she'll come home and lo, he'll have up to run away with a social climbing heiress from New York. Poor Eliza, that's simply frightful. How delightful! How poignant it will be on that inevitable night when she hammers on my door in tears and rags.
miserable and lonely, repentant and contrite. Will I let her in or hurl her to the wolves? Will I show her kindness or the treatment she deserves? Will I take her back or throw the baggage out? I'm a most forgiving man. The sword would never go, ever would. Take a position and staunchly never budge. Just a most forgiving man. But I will never take her back. If she were crawling on her knees, let her promise to atone. Let her shiver, let her moan. I'll slam the door and let the hellcat free. Marry Freddy. Second nature to me now, like breathing out and breathing in. I'm very grateful she's a woman and so easy to forget. Rather like a habit one can always break. And yet, I've grown accustomed to the trace of something in the air, accustomed to her face.
Wash my face and hands before I come, I did.
Eliza.
Where the devil are my slippers?
Thank you. You've been listening to Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady at the BBC Proms. Orchestrations by Alexander Courage, Al Woodbury and Robert Franklin. Supervised by Andre Previn. The My Fair Lady ensemble on stage, including singers with supporting roles, Jamie Farr, Susan Fay, Gemma Wardle, Lynn Wilmot, Gillian Barton, Valerie Cutco, Julie Jupp, Jill Martin, Julia Sutton, Steve Elias, Adrian Grove and Stephen Matthews. John Barr, James Barron, Sam Hiller, Mark Meadows, Nigel Richards and John Stacey. Choreography was by Josh Prince, stage direction by Sean Kerrison. And now the principals. Jenny Galloway as Mrs. Pierce. Julian Ovenden was Freddie Eynsford Hill. Sean Phillips, Mrs. Higgins. James Fleet played Colonel Pickering. Alan Armstrong, Alfred Doolittle. And entering from the sides of the stage, Anthony Andrews as Professor Henry Higgins. And Annalene Beachy as Eliza Doolittle. My Fair Lady was played by the John Wilson Orchestra and conducted by John Wilson.
And that was Petrarch Trelawney at the Royal Albert Hall. And there's another chance to hear tonight's prom on Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Well, we return to the Royal Albert Hall tomorrow evening for our next prom, a performance of Debussy's opera Pelléas et Mélisande, and that starts at 7 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3, the home of the BBC Proms. Well, coming up next this evening at 10:30, Here and Now, we'll be hearing music by Giles Swain, Hugh Wood, Michael Nyman and Helmut Lachenmann. So to take us up to that, here's some music by Debussy. This is one of his 12 Studies, played by Pascal Roget. Thank you. Pascal Roget played Debussy's Study No. 8. This is BBC Radio 3. The time is 10:30, and it's time for our weekly new music programme, Here and Now. Here's Robert Warby.
Tonight, the first of a pair of programmes from the Cheltenham Festival. We're going to hear two British string quartets played by the Castalion Quartet. The first had its premiere in Cheltenham 50 years ago, almost to the day. An exciting time for its composer.
Any young composer just hopes that he will get heard. But all the various occasions in those far-off days came as a pleasant surprise. I could never realise that it was happening to me. I do remember an early time when the Dartington Quartet were preparing a premiere of my first quartet. And I remember thinking, goodness, what luck. I can't believe that this is happening to me. And I've felt that more or less all my life, really.
The ever-youthful Hugh Wood, 80 this year. And we'll hear his first quartet in just a moment. The other work from that Cheltenham concert is part of the Encore scheme, a joint project between Radio 3 and the Royal Philharmonic Society to give repeat performances and broadcasts of works by living composers. Very much alive is Giles Swain. His third quartet, written in Africa with Australian and Simian inspiration, sees the light of day once again, a mere 19 years after its premiere. And after Cheltenham, we're off to Aldborough for the latest in our series of the Here and Now 50, Helmut Lachenmann's Mouvement für die Erstarrung, played by Ensemble Moderne. But first, here's Hugh Wood again.
The Cheltenham Festival very kindly discovered that my first string quartet, which happened to be my very first BBC commission ever, was done exactly 50 years ago. And first of all, they contrived to do it on the day. Actually, the 8th of July is not the day. The 5th of July was, where I had another performance here. So it's rather nice that the piece, it's nice for me, I don't know about other people, that the piece has lasted for 50 years. And even nicer, the composer has lasted for 50 years, really. It's got four movements. And it's one of the very first pieces after I had sort of fallen under the spell of the music of Schoenberg, which influenced it in various ways, various probably inaccurate ways. And the four movements build up to the finale. The first movement introduces lots of themes that you'll hear later on. It leads straight into a scherzo, which again was one of a series which I repeated in other pieces time and time again. Then there is a very small slow movement, and because it's small it's called adagietto, and that too is connected with the rest. And then there's the last movement is the most expansive one, and you'll hear lots of material that have been transformed from earlier versions of it earlier in the piece. And so this business of making the finale the most important movement, which Beethoven really started, is something that I followed there. And it's being excellently played by the quartet, which I've just heard them rehearsing, and they're really, really marvellous. And it's rather nice to think that none of them were even born when it was written.
And that quartet is the Castalion Quartet. Sadie Fields and Daniel Roberts, violins, Charlotte Bonton, viola, and Rebecca Herman, cello. Here they are, performing Hugh Wood's String Quartet No. 1. Thank you.
Thank you.
String Quartet No. 1 by Hugh Wood. It was performed by the Castalion Quartet at the Cheltenham Festival last weekend. Next from this Cheltenham concert is Giles Swain's Third String Quartet. It's often said that the one thing harder to get than a first performance of a work is a second. A joint initiative by Radio 3 and the Royal Philharmonic Society seeks to address this. Here's Giles Swain.
I haven't heard this piece for a while. It was generously selected by the Royal Philharmonic Society Encore project for, as it were, revival. It was first played up near Leeds at Harwood House by the Schamper Quartet in 1993, I think. So I haven't heard it for 19 years, so I'm looking forward to it very much. As for the piece, I hate describing pieces, but if I have to, I can say that it's in one movement. I would think it's about 22, 23 minutes. And the ideas, there are kind of three ideas, and musical ideas, which make up all the material almost, except I wrote it in very curious circumstances. I wrote it when I was living in the West African bush, in a house without water or electricity, which I'd built, most of the time with a small monkey sitting on my shoulder. And I wrote it page by page, almost like a long letter I was writing, because it was dedicated always to the memory of an old friend of mine called Betty Tuckwell, who was Barry Tuckwell's mother, who had recently died. And it's written in memory of her. And because she was an Aussie, the tune Waltzing Matilda pops up subliminally in various places. And then as we approach the end of the piece, the coda of the piece, which, if you like, is a depiction of her death or a celebration of her life, but it brings her very long, she was very old, her long life to a close. It comes complete in four-part canon. It's a canon at the minor third in four parts. And it's very, very stark and still and extremely slow. And then at the very end, you hear there's a pulse, also based on Waltzing Matilda, but just a rhythm. And then you hear a very high harmonic E, like somebody's cardiogram in a hospital stopping. And it's her life comes to a close. So the ingredients are this memorial or like a letter to an old friend who's died. At the same time, there's the opposite. Because I had my monkey Cuckoo sitting on my shoulder most of the time when I was writing it, he keeps popping in, and you hear pop pop cuckoo cuckoo coming in from time to time. So there's a kind of, he was young, youthful playfulness, and old age coming to the end, or somebody coming drawing to the end of a very long life. And then the Australian subtext coming through. Apart from that, there are kind of three melodic cells which are woven together all the way through to create the piece. And having said I don't like talking about music, I've just rabbited on for at least 8 minutes.
More like 3 minutes. That was Giles Swain, and this is his third string quartet, played by the Castalion Quartet.